Hey, so I'm Amy. I'm the host of the Woman in Comedy podcast, and I get to chat with amazing women in the industry, behind the scenes, up on the stage, all about their journey, and a little bit about me. So I work as a programmer for the Woman in Comedy Festival here in Manchester. I also work as a progression booker and look after Beat the Frog for the Frog and Bucket, and work as an artist liaison. Is pretty much me, and I've worked in comedy since 2013. And I started this podcast because I just wanted to talk to amazing women, really, and just have a platform for us to chat and just be ourselves and talk about what it is to be in this amazing, magical, sometimes hard industry. So sit back, grab a brew and a Becky, and enjoy the podcast. There we go. Now I can see your face. Sita, how you doing?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, how was your trip over?
Yes, not too bad. The M62 was kind to me, although the potholes, I was worried they were going to take up my car at one point.
There are really bad potholes between Manchester and Leeds.
It started getting worse. I swear to God, even when I drove over on Tuesday, it wasn't that bad.
They just knew you were coming.
I think that's what it was. They were like, you know what, Sita, you've got a terrible car. Let's just take it out.
Let's just this take out your tyres.
Yeah, they were like, you need to buy a new car. You've known this for like 4 years. The check engine light has been on my car for 4 years. But I had it checked. Like the guy at the garage was just like, you can't, the thing that's wrong with it, you can't make it any worse.
Yeah.
So I was just like, well, can I get away with not paying for it? Because I think the repair was more than the car was worth. So I was like, if we can avoid that, I would appreciate it.
Yes, especially being a comic and having to travel.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of traveling involved. So much driving.
Yeah, but I think it'd probably be better driving than catching trains and buses.
I have massive respect for all the comedians that get the bus or the train anyway. I couldn't do it. I would be in a panic at all times.
Yeah, especially these trains these days. They're always cancelling.
Yeah, half my team from like my day job was stuck in London yesterday because of like last minute train dramas. So I was feeling very grateful to have the car.
So what do you do to keep a roof over your head?
So I am, this is going to sound really poncy, but I am the director of digital marketing.
Wow.
At a PR agency.
Nice.
Yeah, it's full on.
Yeah, and you do comedy on top of that.
Yeah.
Girl boss.
Felt like it was a good idea at the time. And to be fair, like the guys at my work, it was one of the things I said when I got the job was, you guys, one of my caveats of taking the role is that, you know, I need to be flexible around the hours because I travel a lot, and they've been so good with it. It's made all the difference.
Well, I guess also because you can work from remotely.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like you can be in a hotel, gig that night, and then be in a hotel and just work.
I have dialed into many calls from anonymous hotel rooms, which makes me... I hope that people know that I do comedy across the agency. Otherwise, they're just going to be like, what is the side hustle here? And why is she in a hotel?
Yeah. And how was Fems and Thems?
Oh, my God, I had the best time. It's, you know, what's really lovely, and I think this is obviously speaking as a woman in comedy as well, is there's so many spaces that people are opening up, like Fems and Thems, those kind of nights, where it's a really safe space, it's a really supportive environment, and it's a really good place to bring new comics on and just give them the best experience of it. I loved it. Had the best night.
Yeah, they almost sold out, which is exciting.
I saw, yeah, it was packed. It was such a lovely audience.
Yeah, I think it was pretty much sold out by the time door sales came along.
Brilliant.
So, which was great for their first birthday and International Women's Week. I'm just calling it a week because tomorrow's the official day, even though this is going to come out afterwards. But tomorrow's the official day, isn't it?
Yeah.
The 8th. Yeah. Yep. What are you doing? Are you on a bill for it?
It's not a specific International Women's Day one. I am gigging, but I've done various other bits around it. So there's been a few sort of International Women's Day aligned nights that I've done recently, which is quite nice.
Yeah.
It's a shame that it takes International Women's Day for a lot of us to meet on these bills.
That's also true because you don't get to meet because there's always just one woman on a bill.
Yeah,
normally.
I don't really understand the thinking behind it, to be honest. It's because I think if you look at the women that are in comedy at the moment, they've all got such unique perspectives, unique styles, and it's almost like they're scared that if you have more than one on, it's going to, like, oh, no, it's going to be all the same material. All they talk about is periods and fannies.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like, it's such a outdated way of thinking of it. And I think in some ways it almost pits women against each other on the circuit as well, because you feel like you're either or on the bill. It's like you can't exist in the same spaces. But I think nights like Femmes and Thems and some of the other lovely nights that are going on at the moment, which are really geared towards giving women a space, are really helping break down those barriers.
And it also shows that women do sell shows.
Yes, yes, they do.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you sell, with, you know, that lineup, that's 200 seats.
It was, yeah, it was fantastic. I was so happy for the guys when I saw that full of a room. And then also being on that bill was just insane. It was such a nice night.
Yeah, the audience were buzzing. Like, they were giving so much love as well, which was exciting to witness.
Yeah, and it felt it on the stage as well. As soon as you get on there, you know that they're kind of rooting for you to do well, rather than be like, oh God, here's my preconceived notions. This is what they're going to talk about. This is all they are. But again, it was like four women on the bill. So much difference in the material, so much difference in the style, and a really just beautiful night.
Yeah. And then do you feel like, because it's International Women's Day tomorrow, that you get a lot of people like wanting you? Like, more, like, you're getting more and more gigs offered to you? Or actually, a good question to ask you is, do you feel like they expect you to do it for free?
A bit of both. There's definitely promoters or people that will reach out around International Women's Day, even if it's a spot that like a gig I've tried to get on before that, like, I've just had no reply from, and been like, oh yeah, like, would you be interested in doing this night? And I was like, oh, I'm already booked, thank you, but you know, life goes on. The freebie thing, yes. Like, are we doing this? And it's like, you know, it'd be really nice. It's a bucket split, or it's a pay what you feel, but none of it's going to the act. So I was like, no fucking thanks.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, it shouldn't be a token effort. Do you know what I mean? Be good all year round. Be supportive. Be an ally.
Yeah.
It can't just be one day a year.
I was on a panel chat and we talked about how women shouldn't be a genre. Like,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it shouldn't be a genre. And then it's like, oh, I'll do it for free because it's this genre. Look at us.
Yeah. And I had like, because I struggled with International Women's Day, because obviously I work in marketing, so I see both sides of it. We do a lot of kind of campaigns. And I'm lucky that I'm in a position where I can influence the types of things people put out, because often you look at a panel and they'll be like, yeah, it's all women. I was like, yeah, but it's all white women.
True.
There's no representation of the global majority in there. Mm-hmm. And it sort of makes the assumption that that's enough of a representation, and it's not. But again, in my day job role, it's really nice to be able to say, actually, can we make sure that there's this representation on there, that we've got people, you know, from different backgrounds that aren't just of a type.
Yeah.
And I think that really helps, and it like, representation really matters. And I think as far as, like, you know, women on bills, like women in the workplace, and making sure that there's that sort of diversity aspect to that as well.
Yeah. So how have you, as you as a comic of the global majority, like, how's it been carving this path for others to come after you? I know that's a big heavy question. But for you, how has it been, like, having people that you've seen in the comedy world go, oh my God, I want to do that too? Like, how did your journey, pretty much what I'm asking you is, how did your journey begin? And
so it is the classic comedian story where I had a breakdown, and then you say that in any other industry, it's like, oh, how did you get into this? It's like, I had a breakdown, and then I needed to direct it somewhere. Everywhere else is horrified. Comedians just like, yep,
yes,
that sounds about right.
I mean, I was shaking my head. I was like, yes.
Yep, age-old story. But yeah, I had a big life change, and one of the things I'd seen, so it was like a relative of mine actually did a women in comedy course, which was at Bradford University.
Oh, cool.
And it's like a free course that they do. And I went to go see her in that, and she was brilliant. And all my friends, when I posted about it, said, you should do this. And I was like, well, I don't know. But then the breakdown came about probably about a year later, and I was like, I think this is the perfect time to do comedy. So this is absolutely what I should do. So I went and I did like a little bit of a comedy course that was in Leeds. And it just helped me find my voice, because it wasn't really about, like, they can't teach you to be funny and write jokes. You know what I mean? That's not what it was about. It was really about breaking me out of my comfort zone, allowing me to speak. And it was there that I realized I wanted to do material about my experiences, obviously, as a mixed race woman, as a, you know, kind of navigating the world from that perspective. So that meant a lot to be able to do that. And it was really nice to see the response I got.
Mm.
But that happened just before the pandemic started.
Oh, no.
So I literally got 3 gigs in and then the world shut down.
Yeah.
And then I did a few online gigs, which was bizarre. But I got booked off the back of that.
Really?
Yeah, so it was quite nice because then when restrictions started like lifting and when they were like, you know, they were up and down for a bit, but my name kind of got around locally. So around West Yorkshire, got quite a few gigs off of the back of that. And then the momentum started building, which was, again, unexpected. And like I was a bit like, oh God, I thought this was going to be, you know, just a post-breakdown one-hit thing.
Yeah.
And then I did the BBC New Comedy Awards and I got through to the semi-finals in 2021.
Yeah.
And the showcase was at the Frog and Bucket.
That's right.
Yeah, so that was amazing. And then from there, it's just been a case of like really trying to get my name out there, get my face out there, you know, apply, work on material, make sure that I'm, you know, authentically representing myself, but also finding ways to relate to other people who might be in similar circumstances or even not. It's just sometimes it is a case of just opening people's eyes to experiences they might never have heard of, that they might never have actually been through.
And it's actually refreshing to hear as well as an audience member. Do you know what I mean? Like just seeing different stories is actually, you don't realize how refreshing it is because we see the same story, white person's story all the time. Do you know what I mean? And especially on stage. And then to have someone from the global majority doing a set, doing something different, you're like, oh, yeah, but you can relate to it as well. It's crazy how people think they can't. But
oh, God, that is such a, like, that's the thing. There's a big thing of being typecast. And my sister's an actress and she gets it all the time. The roles that come her way will be of a type. And there's been times when she's been like, you know, she's been like, I really don't want to take this role, but also I need the screen time.
Yeah.
She's part of the reason that I do a lot of this is because I've seen the struggles that she came up against. And I think between the two of us, it's nice to know that maybe we're just breaking down some barriers to kind of make a little bit of space for other people.
Yeah, because like, as well, it's quite nice that you've got her because there's probably a lot of people that don't have a partner in crime that they can talk to when probably getting a lot of pushback saying, no, we've ticked our box today.
Yeah, 100%.
So it's probably nice for you to have that person to be like, oh, yeah, I totally understand what you're going through. Because I don't think people realize what it's like in the arts. Like people assume the arts are so lefty and so open, but actually it's still quite stuck in its ways.
It's a really strange thing to come up against because like you say, it's a creative industry. And then it's like, guys, think outside the box. Come on, this is what we're supposed to do. I'll tell you one of the things that happened, one of those times when I got like, I was fuming. I was like, I hit the roof about it afterwards. So I got approached by someone to do a gig.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, he'd reached out to me directly and he was like, oh, see, I'd really like you on this lineup that I've got. He said, it's a themed night, all this kind of stuff. And I was like, well, I'm really sorry, I can't do the night. And then later on, I saw this person posting looking specifically for Asian acts. I was like, oh, cool. It must be a lineup celebrating, you know, people of color and those kind of voices. It wasn't. The theme of the night was curry. So he wanted curry themed acts.
Oh my gosh.
And I find it really difficult. Like this is one of the things I've been trying to work through over the last few years is being a bit more vocal about things.
Yeah.
I'm used to keeping my head down, not rocking the boat because of fear of like repercussions.
Yeah.
So I sent him a message outlining exactly why I would have felt uncomfortable and how I would have turned down the gig even if I could have done it. I don't think the night is doing a good thing. It's not about representing those voices. It's about fitting a theme with a very racially insensitive poster.
Yeah.
Oh, God. And I got everything thrown back at me. Oh, I've just spoken to all my Asian friends. They think you're being ridiculous. Spoke to my neighbor. He's Indian. He thinks you're stupid. And I was like, yep, okay, fine. You're exactly the type of person that I thought you were.
Yeah.
Go do your thing.
But also, it sounds like a joke in a way. Do you know what I mean? Like, just that typical stereotype.
That's it. And I was just, I wouldn't, it's not an empowering thing to do. I've seen people mean well and maybe not come at it from the most sensitive angle, but without meaning to this person, it was just like, it. I can't even describe how left field this stupid request. I was like, what is this 1970? Like, where are we? Because I feel like we've come past this now.
Yeah, but sometimes we feel like we've come past things, but actually we still haven't, in a way. Like, we have and we haven't. It's like we go two steps forward and then we go about three back. Ugh. And you're like,
yeah,
come on, guys.
That is the story of my life.
Yeah.
Like, it really is. I've written an article, actually, that it's for the, like, for my work.
Yeah.
And it's the marketing post that we're putting out. And, like, the whole thing of it was, like, they just wanted my perspective on what it means to be a woman in leadership.
Mm.
And, like, sort of my journey. And I wanted to really make the point that we need to just appreciate the individual journeys, because we're not all starting off in the same place.
Yeah.
And I think that is a big mistake that people can make, especially around things like International Women's Day, where some companies, some people, some brands can think they're ticking a box.
Yeah, very much with pride, I feel. Yeah. Right, Pride Weekend is very, like, the companies that you see that suddenly just change the color of the horse or whatever, and you're like,
oh, 100%. It's frustrating. It's nice to be able to educate people.
Yeah.
And it's nice that, like, so with the, again, the company I work for, they are brilliant at just letting me be myself. Mm. I've never had to feel like I have to apologize for anything if I've called out, you know, bias that I've seen from maybe somebody within our industry. Like, they're behind me 100%.
Yeah.
And it's such a nice environment to be able to, you know, spend my working days.
And do you feel like marketing helps you in a way with comedy? Because that's one of the biggest things, isn't it? As being a stand-up, is you are your own business. So not only do you have to kind of make yourself a little bit of a brand, but I've just had this thought when you keep talking about your marketing, and I thought, wow, you must have this wealth of knowledge to be like, I know how to market myself. I could sell a show. I could. Do you feel like you can transition those?
Right. So hypothetically, yes. I wouldn't want anybody to look at my current social media and be like, she does this for a living, because I do it during the day. Like, I do it very well, like, for clients. It's all multi-channel marketing. It's, you know, pushing brands, pushing events, pushing, like, whatever they need. When it comes to my own socials, I am very lax, but it is one of those skills that if I had the time to sort of sit down and think, right, I'm going to do myself a social media marketing strategy. I'm going to do this online. I'm going to do this. I could definitely make it work harder.
Do you think it's just because you work in marketing all day and the last thing you want to do is like, ugh, the last thing I want to do is marketing? But, or do you think there's a bit of this deep down going, that fear? Do you know what I mean? Like, because as you said about using your voice and putting yourself out there, but I noticed that a lot of women in comedy are more afraid to go out on social media and push themselves and push their shows because we're such in a male-dominated show. Because men would quite happily take space. Do you think there's a little bit, or is it just like, no, I market all day, I can't be bothered?
Both, right. Yeah. So the thing, like, if I look back at sort of, because I've only been really doing comedy for, this is like the fourth year I've been doing it, and I think, like, I can't even say it, I'm doing all right. That's as much as I'll be able to ever be. But if it was a bloke saying this, he'd be like, I'm fucking smashing it, I'm doing this, that, and the other. And I can't bring myself to say it. Like, and there is that sort of humility aspect to it, which I think is to my detriment and to a lot of women's detriment, because we're too scared to be like putting our hands up and saying, actually, quite proud of what I've done here.
Yeah.
So I am a little bit, hesitant at putting myself out there, and it is definitely a confidence thing.
Yeah, because men would be like the David Beckham meme, you know, the one with Victoria Beckham, and she's just like, I'm working class, and he's like, tell the truth. There was a meme that went round, and
with Rolls Royce,
and then he's like, I've done an open spot, I'm closing, and it's like, tell the truth, an open spot gig. It's like,
there's a big part of that, and I think that's why I'm trying to, at the moment, I've been trying to make a bit of an effort to actually elevate other women.
Mm.
Because it's like, I'm going to be shit at doing it for myself, but I might as well try wherever I can to put people forward, like, you know, get their names around. Like, if there's nights like Femmes and Thems or some of the other ones that I've done, I want that, you know, even if I'm not on the bill, it's so important that there's this path that is being carved out.
Yeah.
That other people know that it's there.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially for Asian women, because I don't think there's enough representation. Obviously, things are changing, but I do feel like there's still not enough voice. There's still not enough Asian women on the lineups doing comedy, because you guys are hilarious, but I still feel like we really need to reach out to show women that you can do this.
Well,
that's probably my question before, and I probably should wait until now till we warmed up. But yeah, that's what I'm meaning, that path that you're kind of creating.
Yeah, I think that's, so I'm doing that, the workshop that I mentioned to you about, the one that sort of got opened my eyes to comedy, the one at Bradford University, they actually approached me and they were like, look, we want to do this. There's a lot of women in colour who are interested in doing this and they don't know kind of where to take it next. Would you run the course? So I'm doing that at the moment.
Oh, that's cool. Okay, plug it.
So it is at Bradford University and it's the Women in Comedy course. And at the moment, I think we are 2 weeks in of a 4-week run, but hopefully it's something that goes on ahead of that. And we've got a showcase at the Theatre in the Mill in Bradford on the 26th of April.
Oh, that's amazing. Because Bradford was not the winner of City of Culture, Arts Culture, wasn't it?
I'm so proud. Yeah, so I'm from Bradford. I live in Leeds, but I'm from Bradford and I'm so proud of it.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that, like, I think it can be a bit of a punchline to a lot of jokes.
Yes.
I've used it as a punchline to some of my jokes, I'm not going to lie. But seeing just what can be achieved and, you know, giving people the chance to stand up, get involved in the creative arts, showcase the talent and the culture of the city is so important.
Yeah, yeah, because there's a lot of talent coming from Bradford.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm being serious, because one of my dear friends is from Bradford and they did a play and they were part of the arts culture funding. And it was just amazing to go to Bradford and see their show. They're non-binary, so to see their show, it's just, you know what I mean? And it was just like, oh, there's like this little hidden gem in the north east. I had to get that right. Northeast. I'm not from England, so please forgive me.
But yeah, it makes me so proud. My sister's been involved in a few things like in the past that she's done as part of like the Bradford Fringe. Yeah. I did the Bradford Fringe comedy. That was the one online that I did actually that got me booked off the back of that, which kind of set the ball rolling for comedy. But it's every time I hear of an initiative, it's like at the moment the amazing thing is they're renovating the old Odeon.
Yes.
Now I remember going, like, it was a big deal because we were skint. So if we went to the cinema, it was a big deal. And when we went to that one, it was such a gorgeous building. It was so special to be able to go as a family to the Odeon. So when it's been sat there like vacant for years and years, I always felt like it's such a wasted opportunity. And it's amazing to now know they're actually investing in it.
Aren't they also doing up the arts? Because the theatre I went to see their show, they're doing that place up as well. It's right next to the shopping centre.
Oh, is it the Bradford Playhouse?
Yes.
Yes.
Because they're doing that up as well, aren't they?
Yeah, it's another great venue. I've gigged there a couple of times. There's comedy at that venue. And again, like, doing a hometown gig, I emceed it last time I did it. Although I emceed it and I didn't realise for the first 10 minutes that my fly was down.
Oh no!
And it was the one time I wasn't wearing black pants with my black trousers. And one of the audience was like, he waved me over and he was like, your zip's down. I was like, oh shit. So I had to chastise the audience for that when I went back up. I was like, you absolute bastards.
People don't tell people. Do you know what I mean? Like, no one tells you when you got stuff in your teeth.
I'm paranoid now. I check every time before I go on stage that my zip's up.
Yeah. Because that's hard. Little things like that can lose an audience.
That's if they're staring at my awful, like, you know, wash day, only pants left, showing out my zip, then, you know, it's probably going to detract from what I'm saying just a little bit.
Just a little bit. And then you're probably going to go, oh, that audience was so flat. They were not with me at all. And then I'm like, your fly's down. And you're like,
I can't believe it. I was like, oh no, hometown gig and this is what I do.
I know, I was supposed to have been such a big deal. And I've ruined it. It sounded like a Fleabag moment.
It was. I was just like, oh, shit. Because it was going really, I was like, oh, this is, because I'd gigged there once before and then I emceed it. And then I was like, oh, yeah, I get to emcee this venue. I love this venue. And then I was like, oh, no. Everybody's seeing my big flowery pants. Oh, do you know what? I think they were Christmas pants.
Was it Christmas time? Oh, okay. So was it washing week?
It was washing week. They were the last pants like that I had in the basket. And I was like, okay, these will do. But yeah, it was Christmas pants. At least it was memorable.
That's true. They'll always remember you.
For my Christmas pants.
They're like, let's go back to that gig and just see if there's any mishap. How are you feeling about tonight's gig? You're performing tonight.
Do you know what's really funny? Like, so this is like, I'm really excited because obviously this is like my trial spot at the Frog. But this is the fifth time that I've been on this stage. So this is a big deal for me.
Wow.
Because I did like, so I did Beat the Frog. It was the first one back after the restrictions lifted.
That's right. I remember.
And then I did the BBC New Comedy Showcase.
Yeah.
I did Sarah Millican's Playground a few months ago.
Yes.
Oh, wait a minute. Oh, and then Femmes and Thems on Tuesday.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's tonight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's tough when get you, you know, because you obviously you've got talent, you know what you're doing, but then you just have those nights where you're just like, oh, I am not.
Oh, God. Like, I've had a few where just before going on, I've been like, oh my God, everything's gone out of my head. And I feel a bit like, you know, all over the place. And
yeah.
Luckily, they're less often these days. But, you know, everybody has. Like, I think those are the ones, those are formative. Because I remember the first time I ever died on my ass on stage. This is when, like, early days. And I stood in a room and I got nothing. And I was on for 15 minutes. And I got off the stage and I was like, doesn't feel as bad as I thought it would.
Yeah.
And that's when I was like, maybe I can carry on with this.
I think the deaths are when you learn you can do comedy.
Yeah, it's the resilience. I've said it to so many people, like, oh my God, like, must be so hard when that happens. It's like, it is, but you just kind of have to take it with a pinch of salt because it's gonna happen to everyone.
It can happen to the best of the best. It can happen. You hear stories of, do you know Ray Romano? Do you know that?
Yeah,
from Everybody Loves Raymond. He has a story about how He was doing a tour show.
Oh, shit.
Died. Like crickets, he said. So he couldn't go home with that in his headspace. So he just went and found the closest club and just really jumped on the bill. And just was like, put me on. I don't care if it's 10 minutes. I just need a laugh.
I've definitely had nights like that where I've just gone home and I've been like, so I used to have like a ritual of like, if it was a good gig, I'd get like chicken nuggets from the 24-hour McDonald's near my house.
Oh, that's cute.
I'd share them with the cat when I got in.
Oh, I love that you have a cat.
He's genuinely disappointed these days because I stopped doing it because I started doing it for good and bad gigs. So then I was just getting chicken nuggets after every gig.
Yeah.
And then I was like, my trousers don't fit quite as well as they used to. So me and the cat are on a nugget diet.
Yeah. And, you know, you're probably having more and more good gigs. So you're probably like, I could justify.
That's it. It's like, where's the cut off?
Yeah. Especially a 24 packet of chicken nuggets. What sauce do you get?
Do you know what? I'm really boring. I go for the barbecue.
Do you?
Although there's been a few times and I know now to check the bag because they've left the sauce out. I want to watch just dry chicken nuggets. The cat loves it, obviously. He's happy.
That's McDonald's. Come on.
I know. Be better.
When I used to eat meat, I would have sweet and sour. Do you have sweet and sour over here?
Yeah.
It's
one of the options, but I always forget all of the options. And the guy, the stupid guy, like, he's not stupid, I'm stupid. The guy who works behind the counter, it's always the same guy cause when I go over, and I always have to say, what sauces? He's like, what sauces do you want? I was like, what sauces have you got? And he looks at me like, you know what fucking sauces we've got. You ask me every week. But I'm like, just run through them again. And I always choose barbecue.
Just barbecue.
Just that one.
I know. It's kind of like, it's funny because I used to work at Starbucks years ago. And it's funny when the people come in, you can like, and you they're regulars and you know their face, but you can also feel a sense of like, they're a little embarrassed that they're coming in for the same order every time. You know what I mean? Like, and you're just like, I don't care. Like,
I worked at Costa Coffee. It was my first job when I was in college. And that was the same. There was certain people that come in, I could ring their order up before they got to the till.
Yeah.
I knew every time.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. some people would be funny. They would get like low fat milk and then had a cinnamon bun. And you're like,
I loved it. Like if they got a muffin, it was like, right, skinny this and yeah. then sugar free syrup. And then I want 3 muffins.
Yeah.
And I love those people because I'm like, you do you. Like you enjoy. Like I feel like you need to balance that out because otherwise.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Yeah.
You ain't going to taste the sweet in the drink anyway. So you might as well go for the crappiest version of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, making coffee.
People get so angry about coffee. That was one of the, that was, of all the jobs I've had, when I worked in customer service, like when I was a teenager, that's the one where people were the most aggressive.
Okay, and you guys don't even know how to make coffee properly in this country.
I've heard this
like,
many times.
Like, in Aotearoa, New Zealand, we know how to make coffee. So, if you can imagine, like...
Your face, yeah, I'd love to see your face when you go to any coffee shop here and they present you with what they think coffee is.
I know.
I don't know any better. I went to Italy and it nearly blew my head off.
Yeah, we probably know how to make it. It's a culture. Like your guys drinking, you guys have a drinking culture in this country.
Yeah, we do.
Whereas in New Zealand, we're coffee culture.
Man, I need to go to New Zealand.
Yeah. Yeah, you do.
It is on my list.
Oh, you should go. You should definitely go for like the festival. The New Zealand Comedy Festival. If you're going to do Australia, go to New Zealand as well and do the comedy festival.
That is like, yeah. So my stepson, he keeps saying that he wants to go to Australia. And I was like, man, you went on longer than a 3-hour flight. We're not going anywhere yet.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It's very long.
I don't think he'd be able to handle it. We're going, the furthest we've been with him so far is a 4-hour flight.
Okay. But you've got to remember that you get movies.
That is a good. Actually, do you know what? He wouldn't make him much difference from when he's in the house then.
Yeah, because the great thing about the flights to my side of the world is that you get movies and you get fed.
I do like a long haul flight.
Yeah, they're great, man. They are good because you can sit there and you're like, I can sit and watch 9 hours worth of movies and not judge. Because if you did that at home, people would be like, you sat at home and watch. Well, to yourself, you'd be like, I sat at home in my gym jams.
It's not just that though, it's like Netflix and the TV judging, like the amount of times Netflix,
yeah,
it's like, Theatre, are you still watching? It's like, yes, I'm still fucking watching. Or the TV has just now started threatening to turn off.
Yeah,
it's like, the TV will turn off in 2 minutes if you don't press a button on the remote to tell us you're alive.
It's like, yeah, I'm still watching.
It's like, I have got nothing else to do today. Yeah. I planned my entire day around this.
Yeah, we're see as a long haul flight. You don't have any of that.
No judgment.
No judgment. The screen is still on. And you get to pick your movies that you want. You sit there.
I've got a long haul flight to Thailand next year. I think I'll make the most of that. My sister's getting married in Thailand.
Nice.
It's a long old trip to go with the entire family. But
Yeah. It's going to be a big wedding.
I don't know how many people are going to actually go all the way to Thailand, which I think was part of the reason she booked it in Thailand.
It is a good way to...
Yeah.
Cut the people down. But it'll be nice though. It'll be really hot.
Yeah. It's like, I think that she's been warning us because her and her fiance have been out loads of times. It's like one of their favorite places. So they were like, look, guys, I don't think you're prepared for this heat.
Yeah. It hits you like a brick. It's like, poof. It's the humidity.
Oh, my hair doesn't stand a chance.
Yeah. Because my mum used to live in Hong Kong. And then going there in the summer, you're just like, humidity of the heat. But that's quite compact. You've got the ocean at least somewhere near.
Yeah.
Somewhere. Depends. Is she getting married at the beach or she?
She is, yeah. She's getting married. She's got like a... So we booked to stay like the night before and the night of the actual wedding at this like these crazy, amazing like beachside cottages. And then she's getting married at this gorgeous hotel and then we're somewhere nearby for the rest of the time we're there, but it's 2 weeks with the whole family. I can spend 2 days with my lot before I start losing my shit, so
yeah. I know that feeling.
See how it goes.
I know that feeling well. You're gonna have to be like, can I have a hut to myself?
That's it. I was like, guys, which rooms are you booking, because I'm booking different ones.
Yeah, different hotel.
That's a way to do it. That'll keep my sanity.
Yeah, different hotel, and then you have to walk.
Like, oh, sorry, not in today.
Yeah, you can be like, oh no, the hotel was booked. I had to go somewhere else.
It's such a shame. And they'll be like, we can see you from our hotel on your sun lounger. And like, no, it's not me. Somebody else.
Are you going to look for gigs out there?
I don't. You know, it's not even crossed my mind. I do. Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure they do English speaking gigs out there.
Oh, that might be something to get me away from the family.
Yeah. Oh my God, you should do it. You should look into it.
Yeah, I will do. I've got, you've made me think now, because I'm in Lisbon in a few weeks and also doing a trip around Italy half term. So,
are you doing gigs or just going on a holiday?
Just on a holiday.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, having a long weekend in Lisbon and then trying to get my stepson just to see a little bit more of, like, you know, travel a little bit. So, yeah, we're going to take him around Italy for one of the weeks of April half term, which should be lovely.
Yeah, you should definitely, if you're going international, you should see what gigs are out there.
I don't even like, what I do, sometimes when I'm on the way back, so if I've got a work meeting somewhere, I've done it a few times when I've been like in Cheltenham, we've got a client in Cheltenham, and then I'll pick up gigs on the way back.
Yeah.
So I'll try like, just see if I can get anything around or nearby. So I've done that a few times.
That's good.
Which is, you know, because I'm driving back that way anyway, so yeah. I might as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'll try get something in.
Yeah, are you gigging mostly just up in the north? Or are you also doing London? Or are you kind of like, I don't want to do London?
I'm trying to do London.
Yeah.
But a lot of London just want me for a gong show, which is one of the tricky things.
Yeah, yeah. And they're brutal, their gong shows in London.
The one here, like the first night, obviously I did Beat the Frog, and it was a really nice crowd, a really nice environment. They were really, it didn't feel like they were baying for blood.
No, yeah.
Whereas I get the impression a lot of other ones are. I understand why people like them. There's the adrenaline, and if you can do a gong show, like that says a lot about your material. But I think because mine's a bit more storytelling,
yeah,
I don't know that they'd get the best of me in the 5 minutes of a gong, or if I even made it to the 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
I have just got booked for a corporate at the comedy store though, so that's
good.
Yeah. That is like something that came off the back of my day job as well, like to do with, so it's a comedy night specifically for agencies that a guy's running at the comedy store.
Oh, cool.
So I got booked for that.
I mean, you've got lots. So agencies as in marketing agencies.
Advertising, digital, all that kind of stuff. So yeah.
Oh my gosh, you've got so much material.
It writes itself.
Yeah.
Like, and I have some stuff that I used to do in my set as well. So I can like dust off some of that material and polish it a little bit.
Yeah, that's good because then they'll be able to see you.
Yeah. It's mad. It's like absolutely mad.
No, it's not mad.
Oh, everything feels mad to me. None of it feels like this is the female imposter syndrome.
100%, that's what I was saying before.
Yeah, I know.
The guy would be boasting about that. But like, I'm doing the store.
You're the first person I've mentioned it to.
And to our 20 listeners.
Hey guys.
Hi 20 of you.
We appreciate every single one of you.
We do. It's mostly female comics, but that's what this is for.
Oh no, it's so nice. It's nice that this exists.
Yeah. Well, we should have more platforms for women. I love talking about comedy as a booker. I love it, you know, as the Woman in Comedy Festival. It's just really nice to have chats about comedy and your journey, because everybody, as you said, your journey is individual. Sorry, I'm dyslexic, so I'll trip over words. But your journey is individual. So it's really nice to actually sit and chat with you and to get to know you, because I've not met you before.
No, we haven't. I was thinking, because I met Jess a few times.
Yeah.
And then like a few of the different people, obviously, that like work at the venue. But it's really, really, really nice to finally meet you.
I know. And then I've like put you on the spot and be like, let's do a podcast. And you're like, I don't know you. Yeah, I was really excited for today because you're my first one this year.
Oh, amazing.
Oh, no, that's a lie. I've done Georgie and Danny from A Rush of Laughter. Sorry, Georgie and Danny. But you're my first comic of this year.
Okay, that's nice.
There you go. Special.
Thank you.
Oh, my God. So we're gigging this weekend.
Sheffield City Hall this weekend. So I got the Friday and the Saturday. I was just trying to think if my workshop's on Sunday. No, it's not. So I've got Sunday, I Will Sleep All Day.
Cool.
That is my plan.
Yep.
But yeah, I'm really excited. The Sheffield gigs... It was. Do you know what was nice about that one? I did a trial spot and then I got booked the same night.
That's good.
There's other times when I've done multiple trial spots and done arguably as well as I did for this one, and I can't get any progression.
Yeah, I think that's what's really hard, is that a lot of clubs don't clarify their progression.
Yeah.
And so you kind of are left a little bit like, a jellyfish going, what? Why am I not getting booked? And then it can, the, you know, the ego and the mind. I try to make it as clear as possible how progression works at the Frog.
That makes a big difference, though. But I think you can see that because you come in from it from a, like, you know, understanding what it must be like for people, you know, just firing off emails and getting in touch left, right and center and having to do that. It's very odd, I think. And then there's some people who say, oh, these spots lead to progression. And then I'll look at the lineups and I'll think, I don't think it fucking does because there's no women on any of your paid bills.
Yeah.
Like, none of the paid spots are going to women. So where's this progression that you're talking about?
Yeah. Yeah. I know. There's a long way to go.
Yeah. I think it's just such a shame. It's like there's so much talent out there. And I'll tell you what, Danny Johns, she pulled together, I don't know if you saw it, the list that she did of all the female comedians.
Yeah, I did see that.
Absolute queen move.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing to do that. But it just goes to show. It's like, oh, you know, we've not had any women applying. I was like, that's not true.
Yeah.
You've not had, you know, whatever in your head fits that spot.
I think the problem is people are so afraid to take a risk.
Yeah.
And you got to take a risk because you just don't know what an audience is going to go with. Like, you can't, yes, you can know your audience to a degree, but you can't know on that night whether they're going to go with it or not.
That's it. And the thing is, there's always a degree. I mean, with my, like, when I'm gigging, obviously I talk, some of it's about, like, being mixed race. There's, like, other stuff in there as well. And I know that in rooms I have walked into when I thought, these guys aren't going to get me, they're not going to like me, it has massively surprised me when things have, like, you know, gone really well. And similarly, in rooms where I thought, like, you know, oh, this feels like, you know, quite progressive, it's a quite progressive room, like, they've not gone for it at all. So it's so hard to tell. And there's always a degree of, like, you know, if it's not your audience, it's not your audience. That can happen sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just have to admit that you just didn't put a good enough show on. Like, you know, we're all guilty of that, from whether you're exhausted or you've just, like, you just didn't have the right momentum, something threw you off when you were on stage.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I don't know if I've told this story on this podcast yet. So, but back home in New Zealand, it was during the New Zealand Comedy Festival, we had a male comedian doing his hour show, and it was all about him being a bear, like, as in a gay bear. And anyway, all the other shows were sold out, and he had probably had about 20 tickets left. He was in the smaller studio, and the stag do walked in.
Oh, God.
And it was all massive white men. And we were like, they were like, yeah, we'll buy tickets. As soon as they came up, me and the comic were like, oh, no, this is, because I was working in the bar inside the venue. And I was like, oh, no, this is going to be the most painful hour of our lives. And I tell you what, we totally misread them, because they loved all the bum jokes. They went on board with all the gay jokes. They loved it so much that they went to more of his gigs.
See, I love that. I love just having my, like, misconceptions just smashed.
Yeah. It was a really good gig. We were shocked. I was like, I've never seen, I honestly, we misjudged them as a group of people because we thought it was going to be a disaster.
I've had the same, especially when I've gone, like, because I remember at one point I had it in my head that I was like, I'm not going to do well. And I think I had a, like, again, this was kind of early days. I had a gig and it was quite a well-to-do area.
Mm.
And I was like, they're not, like, and it didn't go well. And I just got it in my head. I was like, people in, like, really well-to-do middle-class areas, they're not going to like me. They're not going to get my stuff. Fucking hell. Like, I was so wrong. It's not been the experience at all. And there's been equally times when I was like, I'm on home turf here, or, you know, this is an easy gig. And I thought, shit, they made me work for that one. And then, you know, that goes to show me, don't take it for granted.
Yeah. But again, like I was saying before, I think audiences are looking for a different narrative.
Yeah, it is refreshing. I think one of the nicest things, like, so if you ever see me die on my ass at a gig, I will be out of that venue via a back entrance or as quick as possible.
Mm.
But if one of the nice things about when you do a good gig is if somebody grabs you on the way out, and like on Tuesday, the audience was so nice. I was heading back to my car, and then, like, a few different people stopped me to chat about it. And I was like, Jesus, this is so, I was like, I'm in such a good mood now, because the gig was lovely. And then knowing that, you know, people were connecting with the material, that they liked it as well.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair to Manchester, I think it's quite a progressive city.
Oh, hugely, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I've lived in a lot of different countries and a lot of different cities, and I do think Manchester is one of the most progressive.
I think it's a nice environment. I've gigged loads in Manchester, various venues around it, and I've always had that sense. Yeah. Like, these guys are really open-minded. You know, there's a lot of people that have moved to Manchester because of uni or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like a cultural hub.
Yeah.
And you feel it. Like, everybody kind of lives and breathes it, and it's so refreshing.
Yeah, and people want to support the arts in Manchester as well. Like, I really feel like when it's the Women in Comedy Festival, the amount of people that just come out and they're like, oh, yeah, I just saw the program and I wanted to come and support women in comedy, and you're like, oh my god, this is amazing.
That's, I think that's an amazing thing that you guys do, like even having that, and having, and I've seen some of the people, some of the shows that were on last year, and I was like, I'm so happy there is a place for this person to get their voice out there, to get their story out there,
yeah,
to make people laugh, like in such a, you know, supportive place.
Yeah, and also the venues we have as well are really supportive.
Yeah,
like they come on board, they want to be a part of it, they're excited. Like, we're using Fierce Bar and Gulliver's for the fourth year in a row. Like, I know Gulliver's was used pre-pandemic when Hazel ran it, so it's just like really lovely to have these venues just go, yeah, you can have your the support, the arts.
I love it.
Yeah,
it's so refreshing.
Yeah, I think that's a beautiful way to in this podcast. I think it was, thank you so much for being on.
Oh, thanks for having me.
No, it was a pleasure. Such a pleasure. Right.